Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by the Isley Brothers, the Carpenters, the Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts. This particular episode of the show is brought to you by Maria Bowie, Michael Jinda, and Craig Dunsmere, each of whom, out of the goodness of their hearts, decided to pledge a monthly amount to this show's Patreon page. If you'd like to be one of these people, go to patreon.com/creativecontrol and pledge a monthly amount. You can pledge whatever you like and cancel it or reduce it or whatever you want, whenever you want. That's all. That's very simple. Those folks pledging $10 a month or more for the next week or so, get themselves a Creative Control t-shirt. There's two designs. You can pick one. Just let me know which one you like, and I'll send one to you for pledging $10 or more. Again, we're trying to hit $500 a month. I don't know. Let's try to do it. Again, patreon.com/creativecontrol. Maria, Michael, Craig, all of you who have pledged thus far, thank you. Means the world. Let's get on with the show.
Creative Control with Vish Khanna.
This past Monday, I went to the dentist in the afternoon to get a filling because I have genetically terrible teeth. I floss, I brush my teeth, and eat a lot of sugar. I do have a sugar tooth. Sugar tooth? Is that a thing? Did I just make that up? I have sugar teeth? Whatever. I get cavities sometimes, and I have to get fillings. And my childhood dentist, where I go still, I go to another town to go to the dentist, he is semi-retired, so there's like a new guy there, and I some weird vibes there. I don't know, my tooth still kind of hurts. He did a thing where he put a bunch of stuff in my mouth and then tried to make small talk, which is, I think that's a dentist joke. He just like, all the stuff was in my mouth, he's like, this stock market crashed today, hey? I was like, what am I supposed to... Anyway, I didn't have a good time. And he had to freeze my mouth, so I go to the dentist, he puts the filling in, and then my mouth, so my face, my ear, everything's just like frozen. It hurts a little bit, even though it's numb, it's uncomfortable. And then I just drove myself to Toronto to meet with Julie Fader and Graham Walsh of the band Etiquette, and at their home, and that's what you're going to hear today. The first half an hour of this interview, like, I can't feel my face. I don't know if I'm slurring, I haven't... It's not quite... I don't know. It was weird. But the interview is good, and you'll hear new songs from Etiquette. They're playing the Wavelength Festival this weekend. Camp Wavelength is what it's called, actually. And I love Etiquette. Julie Fader is a very prominent
singer and songwriter. Well, actually, she's a prominent singer. She tends to sing backup for people all the time. Sarah Harmer, Chad Van Galen, Grey Lake Swimmers, these types of people. But she's a great songwriter and singer in her own right. And Graham Walsh plays in a band called Holy Fuck, among other things. And they are a couple in real life. They have a child. And they make music together as etiquette. This is the first, I think... Well, I mean, Graham used to play with Julie Fader. Anyway, this is a unique band. And I like them. And their new record is great. You're going to hear songs from it. It's called Reminisce. It's out now on Hand-Drawn Dracula Records, and you'll hear a song from it. So that's what you'll hear, My Frozen Face and Etiquette, right now. This week, the Bookshelf Cinema is screening Dr. Zhivago, Testament of Youth, The Wolf Pack, Love and Mercy, The Diary of a Teenage Girl, and more. And at the E-Bar, Blimp Rock celebrate a new record and a new video with a show, also featuring Wax Mannequin, on the bill on Friday, August 28th. The Bookshelf is an independently owned cultural hub located at 41 Quebec Street in Guelph. More information about their hours, listings, blogs, and accessibility, please visit bookshelf.ca. I think I'm starting to get that feeling back in my face. Like it's starting to get better.
You aren't drooling anymore.
Was I drooling that much?
No.
My jaw and ear are just...
No, you were slurring.
Was I slurring a little?
A little bit.
It feels better now. I feel like I sound more like myself. But yeah, I'm starting to... You made the watermelon shake thing. Then it's starting... I'm starting to taste it.
Okay, good.
It's better. I feel like... I don't know why. So I brush my teeth... twice a day. I floss every day.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I have genetically bad teeth because I go and they tell me I always need, like, even when they're doing the cleaning, they say, great. And then the dentist guy comes in and he says, oh, you got a cavity. So I'm like, well, what is it? I don't know. Is it great or not? That doesn't sound great.
I don't know. Cash grab?
I don't think so. I think they would.
Do they show you the x-rays?
Who am I? I can't figure out the x-ray. They can show me the x-ray. There could be anything on there. I don't know what they are. Do you have good teeth?
I've only had one filling.
In your life?
Yeah.
How often do you go to the dentist, though?
I go the regular amount.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
One filling.
Do you do
floss and brush my teeth every day
as well. Yeah, so do I.
But Graham's got some fillings.
You get some cavities?
Yeah.
I don't understand it. I think it's genetics. Anyways,
I think so.
It's making me nuts because I have been amping up the ginger ale lately. I got a weakness for ginger ale. Sweets. I have a sweet tooth.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're all decaying. Anyway, it's making
me... Sparkling water is a good option.
Like, yeah, I got a little Pellegrino thing. I like San Pellegrino. Yeah.
A little bit of fruit juice mixed with sparkling water is a good alternate to pop.
Slice of lime.
Yeah, ginger ale is just going between your teeth and rotting them out.
You're right. I won't get one when I go have dinner after this. Last time I was here at your house, this floor, this back porch, by the way, is awesome.
Thank you. Graham built it.
Yeah,
all by himself.
Yeah, he did a great job. It's fantastic. Does he have a background in that, or did he just make it up?
No, he surprised me. He surprised me with when we bought this house. He tore out the walls. He did all of the. He rewired the house, put in new ceilings, built bathrooms
with
built
no
decks.
No background in that.
No,
is that safe though?
It is safe. He does his research. Like he researches home renovation, like he researches recording gear.
Oh, okay.
So he's very thorough.
There's something about a person who gets into engineering.
Mm-hmm.
They might have an aptitude for that, maybe more, because that's a lot of.
Yeah, he used to. He solders things all the time,
sure.
So I think he's got that brain.
Is this back porch held together by soldering?
No, no. But you see, there are no nails.
I did notice
all,
that
it's all nailed underneath.
Yeah, I saw.
Isn't that neat?
There's a program that teaches you how to do that. It's like an American how-to show. I saw that once. And then like weird ways of screwing things in where you don't see the screws.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a whole new world. Yeah, this is really nice. Anyway, the last time I was here, this whole first floor, we did the interview upstairs, right?
Yeah, lived upstairs for close to 2 years before we even ventured down here to live because we've had to renovate the entire house.
Right. You bought it as a fixer-upper.
That's putting it mildly.
It did seem a little like it was in shambles when I first...
Disgusting might be a better way of putting it.
What prompted you to buy a house with so much work?
Well, we looked in Toronto for a year, and anything we were interested in would sell for maybe $120,000 over the asking price.
Very competitive.
Yeah.
And crazy.
And very expensive. And anything that was remotely nice was way out of our budget. So we bought a house that was part hoarder house and part rooming house.
Right.
Full of cockroaches and black mold.
Ugh. I vaguely remember this. We basically went straight upstairs.
Yeah.
That staircase is the same, isn't it, though?
It is.
It's the exact same staircase from, four or five years ago?
Yeah.
Four and a half years ago?
Yeah.
Because the other weird and monumental thing that happened during that interview is that you informed me, we were recording it, but you informed me that you were expecting your first child. And
First and only child.
And then when we posted the interview, it turns out a lot of your friends and family learned of it.
Yes.
Learned of your pregnancy.
My phone started buzzing.
That's kind of cool. That was kind of a neat moment. I don't know. Do you normally reveal that much to of yourself to a journalist? Or
no, I don't. I think I was starting to show.
Oh.
At that point. And I'd kept it to myself, but I was also just home from touring as well, just home for a little break at that point. So it was getting more and more obvious.
You were with the Great Lakes Swimmers on tour at that
point? No, I was singing in Sarah Harmer's band for her last record.
So you felt not self-conscious about your appearance. You just felt self-conscious that people were going to start asking me probably at some point?
Oh, maybe. I don't know. I think maybe you had picked up on it before the interview.
Because
I don't know if the intent was to spill the beans on the air.
No, maybe not. Your daughter and my eldest child, are basically the same age.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I probably, maybe I was. Maybe I don't remember this instant.
You had a keen sense.
Maybe. Maybe I did.
Why aren't you drinking beer at noon?
I didn't say anything. No, it was a genuine morning.
I was starting to show.
And you made me a delicious breakfast. I remember that.
Yep.
You made breakfast, which the theme of that show was that I would go eat breakfast with musicians. It was like comedians in cars getting coffee, but I invented it before that show, and I should be a millionaire.
Well, I remember for about a year and a half, everything I cooked was with a small hot plate.
That's right.
A toaster oven and a kettle.
That's right.
So that entire meal, I think I made tacos.
You did. You made breakfast tacos.
Yeah.
You did. And then just moments ago, you offered to let me stay here for dinner. And
I am making tacos this evening.
It's a favorite.
Yeah.
Tacos are fun.
Yeah, fun and delicious.
Fun and easy to make, and I can see. But you've expanded. You've got a great kitchen. This is great.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, this is great. And so Graham may or may not be joining us. He's downstairs working with Dan Beckner on something.
New operator's record.
New operator's record. So, and Graham is, are you actually married, you and Graham?
No.
Not married.
We're common law.
Common law. And so you have a studio down in your basement.
Mm-hmm.
What's that like for you when you're not the ones making the music? Because I can understand, like, you're making etiquette records or whatever, and it makes sense. But when you have strangers tromping in and out of your house.
It hasn't been strangers yet.
Oh, okay.
It's pretty great, actually. Everyone's respectful and kind and talented that's been coming here, so it's good.
Who would have been down there?
Recently?
Because you mentioned that Graham has been very busy, overextended himself, I think you said a little bit.
I may have said that. Well, just he hasn't really come up for air since April.
Right.
And so, he was busy prior to that, too. So, right. Well, recently he's been working with Hannah Georges, producing a new record for her, and so she's been here a lot. Metz did their last record partly here. They did it at another studio as well. But
so Metz are one of the loudest bands in the world.
Oh, yeah.
Were they tracking here?
They were doing vocals and mixing here.
Wow.
Francis would open the door and yell down, "It's too loud!"
Well, Francis, your daughter was just here with me on the porch, and you were making these delicious watermelon smoothie shake things.
Oh, with the Vitamix.
With the Vitamix, and she's like, "I have to close the door," and you were like, "It's okay, honey," and then she's like, "No, I gotta close the door," and then when she closed the door, she said to me, "Sometimes people sing, and it hurts my ears.
Oh,
it's too loud, so I have to close the door." So...
Well,
I assume
she's been
really,
she's been gushing about Dan's voice.
Oh, well, Dan's got a great voice.
Yeah, she keeps saying, "How did he learn to sing like that?" He's a great singer.
That's very
sweet. So Metz, Young Rival, were here a little while ago. Doom Squad are mixing a record here. New Viet Cong record.
It's being made here?
At the barn and
at the
here.
Barn, right? Okay, so
so it's just been a lot of stuff here, a lot of cool people.
Yeah, but it means that, I mean, and you've been doing a little bit of etiquette touring,
we've been doing as many shows as we can, but we knew the timing is a little unfortunate that way. The record came out in March, and we've done quite a few shows,
some festivals
since the record came out.
Yeah.
I'm going to say maybe 20 shows.
Right.
But we haven't been able to do any massive touring because Graham's been in the studio since April.
Right. But, I mean, how much touring would you really want to be doing?
I don't know that I want to go too wild with touring. Both of us have toured extensively. And I'm anxious to start working on a new record.
Right. But
I love playing shows and I love recording.
You're in an interesting place that way because we are still struggling, I think, in this music-making industry with what to do because so much of the emphasis is... there's less emphasis on the records, it seems. Mm. That's what we're told.
Oh, okay.
Maybe your perspective on this would be different, but the money aspect of things seems to be in live shows, not as much in people buying records. Has your experience borne that out, or do you think it's...
We're a new band, so I don't know that it's all that lucrative for us, because when you pay people to play and you rent a van and you pay for hotel rooms and get gas, no, it's the opposite of lucrative.
And you're paying, I assume you're still in kind of a door deal mode or depending?
Well, sometimes. Sometimes the guarantee is there.
Yeah.
And doing some festivals this summer has helped.
Yeah.
But it's expensive to play music. It's expensive to record music and to play music. And people don't really talk about that very often because it seems like a sensitive subject or something, or like you're complaining. But I actually am not complaining.
No, I don't think it's complaining. I think it's just explaining the reality of it.
Matter of fact.
Well, it's a matter of fact, but there was an article that came out not too long ago talking about how, I'm paraphrasing it, but it's along the lines of how much depression is present in touring musicians,
mm-hmm.
Among touring musicians.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, and it's, I think it got circulated quite a bit because mm-hmm. I think for some people, you assume that if someone's traveling and playing a big festival that they're having the time of their lives, but mm-hmm. you don't really contemplate the miles of the alienation and the miles of traveling and mm-hmm. isolation that you have. So I guess my point here is that I think more people are talking about it,
mm-hmm.
about the dollars and cents of trying to make something like this viable. So that's mm-hmm. why I'm just curious. You are a new band. There's certainly a pedigree within your band. I mean, with your name, with Julie Fader and Graham's affiliation with Holy Fuck and connection there. I mean, I think probably, have you found people are just curious to see what you guys are doing together?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, based on what they know of you.
I think the band is really good.
It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to figure out how this thing might have developed because it's happening a lot more. I would consider this meeting between you and Graham in Etiquette as kind of a meeting ground between both of the aesthetics that we know of you.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning like it's totally your songs. Like I can mm-hmm. totally hear you, but I can totally hear certainly the Holy Fuck influence in it. Or I made a comment after your Hillside set on Twitter, and it wasn't just about you, but when I was at Hillside, I thought a lot of bands were starting to sound like King Cobb Steely now.
Oh.
Were you a fan of that band? Did you?
Yeah,
know?
Definitely. And Kevin Lynn was the first bass player that played in Holy Fuck.
That's right. That's right. So there's this weird thing, and to describe King Cobb Steely, it's a bit difficult, but by the time, well, in the mid-90s, they seemed to be one of the first bands that were successfully and not kind of clumsily fusing genres in mm-hmm. a way that was really refreshing. It wasn't like a metal rap thing. It was they were managing to find aspects of, I don't know, for lack of a better term, like they were making a kind of, they were absorbent. Mm-hmm. They were taking different groove culture and turning it into kind of pop songs
mm-hmm.
and doing it really well. And I can hear a little bit of that in Etiquette. Can you talk a little bit about where this sound has
like
come from?
Like the melding of influences,
yeah,
you mean?
Yeah, because, yeah, am I wrong? It does seem like this is a meeting ground between what you two have been working on separately.
No, I don't think you're wrong. It's hard for me to be clear about what my taste is sometimes because I think the first record that I released under my name was fairly sensitive sounding with lots of finger picking. But I've been thinking about this recently and how I played electric guitar with lots of distortion for a long time. And then I've been playing keyboards in people's bands for years, but I'm usually just known as a harmony singer because I sing so much with people. But playing Microkorg and Wurlitzer for a long time and playing in Chad Van Galen's band and playing Microkorg and doing kind of weird sounds.
Synthetic sounds.
Yeah. And so it's not a stretch for me to love synthesizer and cool sounds and chorus on the bass, like New Order style stuff. And Graham knows the music that I'm a fan of too as well, so he could, it was a really natural transition to scrap the acoustic that I'd written the songs on.
Oh, you'd written most of these songs?
A lot of them.
Yeah,
that's how I write.
Right.
Typically I've been writing more on piano and Wurlitzer throughout the summer,
mm-hmm.
which has been nice, but the songs that were on the last record were all written on an acoustic guitar, but I knew I didn't want that sound for this point in my life.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to be playing an acoustic guitar on stage. I knew that.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's a total full-on band
mm-hmm.
experience.
Graham and I are both playing synth.
Yeah.
And there's electric guitar, and there's bass, and there's drums.
Right, right. Okay. So it's not,
I don't know that that answers your question, but it was a really natural thing with no premeditated intent.
Do you,
like, let's make a synth-driven record. We didn't intend to do that, but how it started happening, the first sounds that Graham started creating when he stripped all of the demo away and just left a vocal take and started recreating the sound with just my voice,
right,
as the guide, was right. A really interesting approach.
Do you have a sense of what, like, you say you've been spending so much time making guitar music, essentially, mm-hmm. whether it's acoustic or electric,
mm-hmm.
but you say that in writing these songs you knew that's not what you wanted mm-hmm. to do. Do you have a sense of what caused that urge, like that desire to not be playing guitar on these songs? Was it just that Graham stripped them down, or?
No, I'm not exactly sure. I think I've never really felt like a delicate folk singer specifically.
Mm.
I like so many different styles of music, and I like sitting and playing acoustic guitar and singing, but I don't think that I was feeling like sitting by myself. I had a little, you know, doing like a coffee shop type of thing. I just wasn't feeling that.
Yeah, I don't think of your music that way. I haven't thought about it that way in a few years, because there always seems to be this gauzy,
yeah, you're right,
hazy aspect to it, live, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, you're able to conjure this ambient texture
mm-hmm.
within, I wouldn't even say they're conventional folk or pop songs, but they're leaning towards that, but then you've got all this sound.
Mm-hmm.
So you do seem really interested in different sound.
Mm-hmm.
And this, but then there's this groove aspect. That's kind of new.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even though you mentioned the synths and the Korgs and stuff like that, and the synthesized sound, there's beats.
Well, Graham wanted to make out music.
Is
with
that
this
right?
record, yeah.
Why is that?
I don't know. That's what he was calling it.
Make out music.
Yeah, he writes really sexy bass lines.
He does.
And
if those are his,
they're fantastic.
Yeah.
And they sort of get people. That was. I think he got that comment so many times when we were playing the new ideas for our friends.
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, we should make a make-out record. Everyone keeps calling it that. So I'm fine with that.
I find that when I'm listening to the new record that I think of you as a singer. I'm thinking of you as a singer because you have a very particular way of singing and presenting your ideas. It almost seems disaffected. Like, it almost seems distant. And I'm curious if you can capture where that style comes from. You seem like... It's almost alien, I find. Like, it...
Alien!
Yeah, it feels like... I can feel... It creates a little... It creates drama within the songs, for sure, and gives them a particular kind of pace. And I think it's characteristic of a lot of your recent work. And I'm just trying to figure out where it's coming from. And I don't know if you have an answer for it, or it's not robotic,
no,
because that would suggest that it's not doesn't have feeling,
mm-hmm.
but it feels like slightly cold.
Okay,
is it weird that I'm confronting you with how I feel about?
Do you think that the lyrics maybe?
It's the lyrics
contribute to that a bit too.
There's lyrics and phrasing.
Yeah.
Because when I'm listening to the new record, it seems. That there's a certain economy to the lyrics.
Okay.
Some of the songs.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, what's the first song called?
Pleasantries.
Pleasantries. That's one, for example, where you're kind of talking about human dynamics, I think, and an interaction. Like, I can picture what's happening, but it's done so minimally and so, like, observational. It's like you're not even talking about yourself,
mm-hmm.
but you're talking about a situation clearly in the first person. And I feel like that... It's a dramatic aspect to the way you sing. And I don't know if you've ever thought about it, or it's just the way these things come out.
No, I hadn't really thought about it. And I don't really analyze the way I sing or refine my approach to try and emulate anybody. I think I'm a very natural singer because I don't really think about it too much.
Hmm. So, like a robot?
No, it's just very honest, I guess. My approach is very honest, and it's like speaking.
It does seem kind of like speaking.
Yeah,
like
I don't have that speak-sing style, but it's as natural to me as speaking.
Yeah, everything is presented in a very... I haven't really phrased this properly.
Vish says, cold and alien. Sorry, Graham Walsh is here.
So Graham,
now.
Graham just came down.
Hello.
Graham, what was going on in the basement?
Just some vocal recordings. Yeah, Dan's over, and we're doing some wrapping up Operator's record.
Nice. And yeah. Is it going well?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
We were just talking a lot about you and the space
and
your house. It's amazing.
Thanks.
And before you arrived, I was trying to get at my perception of Julie's singing. But right. You, based on particularly what it sounds like happened with this Etiquette record, where you, but the way Julie described it is she made demos and you kind of stripped all the instrumentation away from them, isolated her voice, and then sort of built the songs up a little bit.
I'm a natural tinkerer, I think, especially with music.
Yeah.
And I think to varying degrees of tinkering that happened to some of them. Some songs were more than others.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're always just sort of like, it's like Legos, you know, you're just sort of like tearing apart and rejigging and putting back together and looking at it and then tearing apart and putting it back together. And that's kind of how it sort of went down a little bit. But yeah.
How would you characterize her as a singer?
From what I caught, I would agree. She's very natural and unaffected. And
unaffected for sure.
Unaffected. And yeah, like we didn't, I don't think you do really think too much about like, your delivery or your approach or anything like that. You just kind of like lay it down and it's, make sure it's not pitchy or anything like that. I don't know. It's funny. Julie's voice is more enunciated than others.
That's
other
true.
Singers I've worked with. That's that in, and some people are really trying to hide their voice, but everyone's got a different character to their voice.
That
I always try and work with singers who can know how to sing, and Julie is one of them.
But knowing how to sing isn't just about pitch and notes. It's actually knowing your voice, the strengths of it, and also knowing what comes natural to you.
Totally.
Right?
Yep.
So, and Julie's now leaving.
Yeah, we're tag team.
I don't know what's going on here. It was supposed to be both of you at the same time, but no, it's fine. No, she does. I don't know. I've been listening to her music for so many years now, and I know it when it's her.
Yep.
Particularly her own material. I just can't quite figure it out. I just feel like it's like almost like observational singing.
Yeah.
I feel like she's kind of talking about stuff that is distant from her.
Yeah.
And I can't, anyway.
Yeah, I hear you.
There's distance within it that I think comes from I think the enunciation is true, what you're saying, that's true, and that kind of clarity of purpose is there as well within that. Anyway.
I tend not to analyze the lyrical content too much either. I can appreciate really good lyrics. And I'm getting more and more into lyrics and stuff like that because it can influence your creative process when you're working on the music aspect of it. But I never really...
You don't pay attention to what she's actually saying?
I do, but I don't really like... especially on this record, I wasn't like, what are you trying to say here? And like, let's try... And as a role of a producer, it is important to think about those sorts of things, but this time for her we were just going for vibe.
Yeah,
I guess. Yeah. I don't know.
She mentioned before you got up here that you had suggested that Etiquette should be making makeout music.
Uh huh.
Can you define what your version of makeout? She was trying to describe it in terms of the groove and the bass lines and maybe what it might be trying to influence listeners to do or not do. Can you talk about makeout music?
Well, I don't know. Again, I guess it's just a vibe. Maybe that was a particular creative direction that I decided could be interesting to go on. As far as like conceptualizing the album as a whole and like thinking of an idea of, because you know when you're tearing down songs and building them back up again, there's a lot of places you can go, and so that was probably just like, well, I don't know, this this seems to be a fun direction right now. I was going there.
One of my friends was one of my friends was calling it sex on the bathroom floor.
Is that a drink?
I have no idea, but that's what someone was saying.
Sex on the beach.
Sex on the beach.
Sex on the beach or the bathroom. What?
What's in a sex on the beach, and what can you change in the ingredients to call it sex on the bathroom floor?
I don't think you want to do that.
Baselines.
I mean, like...
Graham was just saying that he doesn't think much about, or doesn't spend much time analyzing the lyrics in etiquette songs.
I don't think he does, really.
Do you?
I read a couple reviews...
That seemed almost like a shot, didn't it?
You would think that, or you never know what's going on behind the scenes and whether their relationship's troubled. But if you listen to the lyrics, and I was thinking, you think I'm talking about my troubled relationship with Graham? Okay. But you know what? I want people to interpret things however they want to.
See,
but I'm definitely not.
That's a vague cop out. The thing you just said, where you're like, I just want people to figure it out.
Well, do you want me to,
not
song
necessarily.
By song
no,
explain?
I've done that a few times
on
the show.
Well, there's no way I would.
No, but...
But if people think I'm talking about my troubled relationship with Graham in my lyrics, I'm not. And if I say something sort of loving, there's a higher probability I'm talking about Graham in that aspect.
But there's also a chance you're not.
There's a chance, but you'll never know.
Are they?
And Graham won't either because he's not interested.
Do you see yourself as more of a narrative songwriter, or are you trying to get to stuff of your own? Get to your own stuff. Meaning, like, I think that's probably evident what I meant by that, right? Are you a storyteller, or are you conjuring something within you?
I'd say both.
Right.
Yeah. I don't necessarily base all of my lyrics on personal experience and frustrations or affections or anything. But yeah, it's the lyrics to me are sort of the same approach as the singing. They just have to come naturally and whatever's on my mind.
I think there's just, and I've struggled, I don't think even that valiantly, but I've been struggling to try to articulate how a person, at least like myself, might describe your singing and how the emotional impact of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's stark, it's haunting, and I think I mentioned robotic and alien earlier, but I also think it sounds very personal.
Mm-hmm.
And it always...
Does the music influence that thought, the starkness and the coldness and the roboticness? Does that guide you a little bit?
The make-out music thing has thrown me a little bit because... I am so used to hearing Julie's voice in different contexts, other than etiquette, that I really home in on it a little bit as the main guiding force. Yep. So even though things begin pulsing, or like today, listening to it on my drive in, I did think a couple times, oh, that's really cool. That's a cool synth part. Like, that's a cool, like, that's really a mm-hmm. rhythmically an interesting thing and really catchy. Or that vaguely reminds me.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Holy fuck. Like, you know, the reductive things you would do knowing the context of this band as a listener. And at the same time, as soon as Julie's voice kicks in, it takes on a whole new character for me.
Right.
So it's just something very interesting about... I was also spending part of my car ride yelling at Siri. So I had Julie's robotic voice, which isn't really that robotic, and then Siri's literal robotic voice. What was I texting you? I was trying to text you.
So your own aggression and robot
yeah, I
may have influenced.
Maybe, yeah. I have issues with robots. I was trying to tell you that my face...
I was stuck in so much traffic, and your music is stressful.
No, it's not stressful.
No, I'm just kidding.
It's the opposite of that. I feel like there's so much going on within your voice that is... And it's like its own story. And I wonder about it, and I don't want to know on some level where it's coming from, but... There's a really emotional quality to the way you sing beyond what you're singing.
I agree.
So the fact that people come in and say, well, these two made a record together and they have a kid, so they must be about that.
Mm-hmm.
That's really strange.
No, it's not.
Right. Or it could be.
It could be. It wasn't.
Right.
It wasn't. It isn't.
Okay.
She was definitely there the whole time we were recording it. We went out to Greg Keeler's studio in the country. He invited me out to start working on demos of songs I was working on, and we just would go there for a day or two or three at a time and start working on the songs, but mostly hanging out,
yeah,
eating food, going for walks in the country and spending time. And that's where a lot of the record was made.
Okay. At the risk of, I don't know if it's hypocritical to have just said, like, people should stay out of your business. I kind of want to get into your business.
Oh.
Just a little bit. I mean, I think it's curious that it's not often that I get people who are on the show who are creative partners and, you know, personal life partners or whatever. I felt weird saying that. It felt old. It made me feel old.
One of the last times I referred to Graham as my boyfriend was in Guelph at a Holy Fuck show. And somebody said, we don't call people boyfriend in Guelph.
Someone said that to you?
Yeah. I got scolded. And I said, oh, I'm sorry. My partner plays in Holy Fuck.
We're all cowboys in Guelph. So everything's a partner.
So, yeah.
That's this crazy.
Guy,
I'm sorry.
I got scolded for calling him my boyfriend.
It's a hard town.
Guelph's got
a chip on his shoulder. Its shoulder, rather.
I like to say partner. I like to say boyfriend.
When I,
so anyway,
I would, I like to say, before I got married, I would say my lady friend.
Yeah.
Which might be from the Big Lebowski. But I like saying lady friend. It's, you should try it.
I refer to you as my, I don't think I refer to you as that.
He refers to me as his wife.
Yes, now
sometimes.
you can do that. You could have
and
done
then
it whenever
when
you wanted.
I say, no, we're not married. Then it comes across kind of funny.
It gets kind of complicated. I do want to find out how this happened. Where did you meet?
We met years ago when I was living in Hamilton. And were you living in Burlington? Yeah.
Graham is nodding. We have to share this mic.
Yes.
You have to be good partners and learn how to share.
I have to share.
You have to share.
But
like,
I like holding the mic.
She's the singer and I just stand in the back and press buttons.
Press still, my buttons.
You still got to share the microphone. Easy. So you met in Hamilton. Where?
Yeah,
what was the context?
I was working at Dr. Disc.
Oh, yeah.
At the record store. And we met. Graham was very shy. I said hi to him, and his eyes got a bit bigger, and he just kind of went, hi. But then we got to know each other. And
Is this a romantic reaction, or were you just shy?
No, he was shy.
Julie was the attractive female who worked at the record store that we all went to.
From Burlington,
Burlington, but yeah,
so would go to Dr.
We would
Disc.
Go to Dr. Disc. We'd drive in.
Okay.
Dr. Disc and go get records. Julie lent me. She was the first person to give me a Black Sabbath Paranoid on in that record, and she's like, "You need to listen to this record." And I was like,
"You hadn't heard it before?"
I don't think, no, my early musical, I grew up in a suburban upper middle class, my musical.
He liked lots of Metallica and Slayer.
Typical upper middle class.
And Mr. Bungle.
But not Black Sabbath for some reason. No, I did like Black Sabbath. It was like a weird mishmash of like what was spoon-fed to me through, you know, like early Much Music and and 102.1 or whatever, and then what my older brother would have, and he had funny weird musical tastes too, so it was just odd.
So wait, how old were you when you encountered Julie?
Early 20s.
Yeah.
We've been friends. We were friends for years.
Based on that? Like those interactions?
Well, no, but we got to know each other played some music. You were mixing bands at a place called The Raven in Hamilton. Do you remember that place?
Yeah.
And I was bartending.
Were you a bartender at The Raven? Huh?
Yeah. And we...
I saw Royal City there.
Yeah.
And I played a benefit there with like the Mellowgrove band and like a billion bands. I can't remember.
Graham Walsh may have been mixing the show.
I drove Royal City when I worked at Outside. And I don't think Jim worked at Outside. I know Aaron worked at
Aaron did. Outside. And I think Dallas Worley eventually did. And
oh, yeah. I worked there with Dallas. But yeah, I drove
Constantine's, yeah.
Royal City in because I was mixing the show. And I'm like, I'm driving to The Raven anyway. So I...
Vish was there.
You were probably... I mean, I don't know how
was
many times...
Was it hidden cameras as well?
No. It was a Royal City headlining show.
I thought maybe... Okay.
And anyways, so that's...
I would road manage Royal City a lot.
Really?
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Not that time.
I think I was at that show, but I thought the hidden cameras were also on the bill because we'd never seen them before and we were like... We knew that a bunch of our friends were in it.
Yeah, I'm trying
to... Did you ever see the hidden cameras at the Raven?
No. I don't think I did.
Okay. It was one of the first... I think the first time I ever saw them was at The Raven, and I feel like it was a Three Gut kind of show. Well, although Royal City might have also played with like Songs Ohio or something in Hamilton. They did something. Yeah, I think they did something with. Anyway, sorry.
No,
but yeah, Graham and I were good friends for a long time, and I moved to Toronto, 10 years ago? And we became a couple shortly after.
Nice. Okay, it's a nice, sweet story.
Very sweet.
Music is involved.
Yes.
But were you collaborating as musicians before you became a couple? In some way?
A little bit, yeah.
What would the context have been?
We played music together in a band called Flux for a little while.
Flux AD?
Yeah.
Was it called Flux or Flux AD?
We called it Flux.
Well, but there was an AD on it.
It just got added on silently because... There were probably 5 other bands with that name.
Is this before Google, where you could check?
Yeah, probably.
Was it?
But yeah, Graham.
Google BC?
Graham.
Flux AD, Google BC.
Did some recording for that band.
Oh, okay.
And played some keys. But we weren't in a band together for very long. Just played some music and Graham did some of the recording. And then Graham got really busy with Holy Fuck and was on tour all the time.
Oh, okay.
Shortly after.
Mm-hmm. What was your first band?
Well, my first...
Graham.
You want to go back into the archives? My first band was a classic band from Hamilton called Mr. Cleavage, but that
Mr.
was my
Cleavage.
High school band. We didn't need to go into that one too much. but yeah, when I... that wasn't really much of anything. Dylan Hudecki.
Yeah,
he played in By Divine Right. Him and I are really old school friends, and we sort of tooled around playing music together.
Okay.
And then, yeah, and I played with Julie for a bit, and then I moved to Toronto and started working at Outside Music. Played in a band called The Empires for a little bit. That was
brief.
Very, very brief. And then met Brian Borchard through Dylan.
Right.
BDR and stuff. And then started playing with Brian in his solo stuff.
The remains of Brian Borchard?
Yeah, played guitar a little bit. And then we started playing around with Casio keyboards together. And the rest is history.
So what is your primary instrument? Or did you ever have one?
I just played guitar. I mean, I started playing... piano and like I've always liked synths and stuff like that, but I played guitar a lot. I don't know, I guess guitar and synths really,
and bass
I
and drums.
Well, I didn't, but that wasn't my primary instrument, and I've mostly just turned into playing keyboards and guitar. Mm-hmm. But now I've been really into bass guitar a lot over the in the last like few years, and I wish I could be a drummer, but I can't play drums.
He plays he's left-handed and plays a right-handed bass upside down.
Oh, okay.
Hendrix, he's versatile like
Hendrix
that.
Style? Yeah. Oh, no, but do you actually change the strings? Or you just,
no.
Oh,
no.
You're playing it upside down, totally. That's horrible. You can afford a better bass than that.
A true left-handed bass, but I found that I would end up playing bass like a guitar.
Right.
So if I flip it upside down, it made me think more about what I was playing and kind of dumbed it down a bit. Which, and then, so mentally, I think about the bass differently when it's upside down than when if it's a guitar. And I kind of, I've been embracing it.
I think I appreciate where you're coming from because I'm a right-handed guitar player, but I can only play air guitar left-handed.
Really? What about like...
What does that mean? I don't know. Yeah. I can't do it.
I think it means you were left-handed it was switched.
Yeah, I'm a right-handed writer.
I know, but when you were really young, you were probably...
I went to the guitar lesson that my parents signed me up.
You were probably a left-handed...
I said, I think I'm left-handed, and the teacher and I went, the teacher was like, we don't have any left-handed guitars.
Maybe
so.
When you were three or four, the pencil was taken out of your left hand and put in your right hand over and over and over again, and you were taught.
Yeah, it's terrible. I honestly, if you wanted to have an air guitar competition right now, I'd have to go left.
Really?
Yeah. Gonna play Foxy Lady for you?
I'd like to see that.
Some Change Your Heart songs, maybe? okay, so that explains your trajectory in a way that is succinct. That's good. Julie, when did you get into music?
I don't even know. I don't know when I got into it. I didn't play in
parental,
school band or anything.
Was family
My
influence?
Dad... listened to music a lot at home and played piano growing up and my siblings didn't play music. I played flute in middle school.
Right.
And I think...
Which was probably assigned to you?
Yeah.
Like you had to probably...
I had to pick an instrument.
Right.
And my parents were really excited when I picked flute and then they ended up buying me one as a present and then sending me for flute lessons.
Aren't those expensive, the flutes?
I don't think it was too expensive. No. It was a student model Yamaha that I still have and I love it. But that was my first instrument and that was how I got back into playing music, funny enough, because some of my friends that I'd met were sitting around playing guitars and singing and I remember the first playing I did with people was showing up with a Beatles songbook and saying, can you guys play these songs? Because I only knew how to sight read.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know how to jam.
Who taught you to sight read?
Well, when I took the lessons
you did take
that
the,
my
oh,
parents
the, oh, right,
sent
right,
me
right.
to in middle
right,
school
right.
because I expressed interest in an instrument. So that was short-lived. And then I pulled out the flute case and started playing it. And then that led to learning how to play guitar because I was sitting around with a bunch of people who played guitars a lot of the time.
Right.
And, and then playing electric guitar and then joining Sarah Harmer's band and playing keys.
How did that come about?
We were friends.
Okay.
We'd known each other for a long time, and it was a surprising phone call to get.
But then
the first time we sang together, it made sense.
She's from the Burlington area as well.
Yeah.
So weirdly, this green belt.
I know.
Connection. Okay. So, interesting. I didn't realize. And what about finding your voice as a singer? Do you remember? I mean, that takes a...
No, I actually don't really know. I think probably singing along to stuff sometimes and then getting a compliment from someone once in a while where I would say, oh, no, I don't sing. I'm not a singer. Because I wasn't growing up in choirs or singing karaoke or singing in bands or anything. I think it just happened because... someone probably heard me, or if I was sitting around with those people playing songs, maybe I started singing along as well.
And
I don't know.
And was your instinct always to harmonize? Or did you suddenly start singing lead? Because you are, as you mentioned earlier...
I guess when I was learning... You know where I found my voice was when I started learning acoustic guitar.
Oh.
That's what it was.
Why?
Because I sang songs. I was learning songs, like Neil Young songs and stuff.
That's where
it
was.
That's probably when I started singing, yeah.
Hmm. Because I think before you became known, I think, as Julie Fader, you, as you mentioned, you were always on stage with Sarah Harmer or Great Lake Swimmers or Chad Van Galen.
Yeah.
By the way, I have to ask you about that Massey Hall show. because that was a magical, strange trip.
Oh yeah, both of those things.
Well, Graham, were you at the Massey Hall show?
I think I was the only person that I know that was not at that Massey Hall show.
He stayed home.
You decided not to go.
He stayed home with Francis.
Oh, well, that makes sense. Yeah. You have a child.
Sort of makes sense. I was thinking, yeah, don't worry. You can come to the next time I sing as a duo at Massey Hall with Chad Van Galen. Don't worry, Graham. Come to the next one when we're opening for the Constantines at Massey Hall.
Yeah. It was a pretty amazing night, and Chad's performance is kind of infamous already. It's only like a couple months old now. Graham, what did you hear about the performance?
I think I just sort of accepted it as just a typical Chad Van Galen. It's just like another Chad set. Ridiculousness.
I think it was very special.
It did seem unique in the extent of the, what I thought was hilarious, but the extent to which it could be considered offensive.
Mm-hmm. His banter, you mean?
Yes.
Yes.
Whole other level. And
before he'd even sung a song, I think.
He said something kind of weird, and then he proceeded to talk about how the Constantines were great because they never sucked D. And then I can't even say it because I don't want to take us down that road. But
then
he said, don't
get me wrong. I love that being performed on myself.
Elevated and it just got nuts. But he's so funny. And I enjoyed it very much. And it was magical. He had did you see his guitar at all? You didn't see any of it, but he had a guitar with a drumstick taped to it. And I've never seen anyone do that before. He was using his guitar as this drumstick. Anyway, I can't even. He had to be there, I think, or go see Chad.
He wanted me to play flute, and sing and play keyboards
at the same time
in one song. So he taped, what was it? A piece of wood because I was going to drone on the six track keyboard. And then he taped a piece of wood and put a shoelace attached to that. And then I put it around my toe while I was on stage at Massey Hall. And I played the drone and played flute and then sang. Yeah.
Graham, would you trust you've become a handyman, I think, by necessity with your home. Would you trust Chad Van Galen to work on aspects of your home? Knowing that you have to shelter and keep secure your wife from your child, and it's Chad Van Galen.
It depends. It depends on the job. But I know he would be trustworthy enough to not take on a job that he didn't feel comfortable doing. But he would do something pretty wonderful, I think, if you gave him the right opportunity.
He's a really magical guy.
Oh, he's the best.
I think he has some carpentry in him, doesn't he? Doesn't he do that stuff?
He's like vagabond carpenter. He loves he always boasts about how he goes dumpster diving, which is what he calls it.
He would be the best homeless guy. He'd have it. He'd be the best at that.
He makes things with found objects.
I think I've heard that. I've read that in a review that he sounds like the most talented homeless guy ever. It's treading into dangerous territory here. All right. Well, so this is the meeting of these worlds, etiquette, and it's called etiquette, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you call the band etiquette? Why was that on your minds?
I don't know that it was on our minds.
Because you're raising a child. You've got to be more conscious about how to behave socially. I'm just curious if that's all inherent in the name.
There wasn't a reason like that. It was just a name that we both said, we like that. That's a good word. And
careful,
we're
going to get in trouble because we came up with a band name that didn't have a good reason.
I'm sorry. It happens on occasion where I fall into the trap of asking, where'd you get your band name
from? I think Sarah Harmer was here. Yeah. We were talking. I don't think I've even said this in an interview, but she was here. We were talking about what's the woman's name with the etiquette guide? It's a classic.
Why are you doing this to me?
Sorry.
To get my phone.
But she said, oh yeah, I was such a nerd in grade school. I wanted the etiquette guide, and I would read it all the time. And I said, Graham was working on a track because our studio was in our dining room at the time because
right.
our basement was getting dug out. And I said, Graham, do you like the name Etiquette as a band? I love that word. And he said, yeah, I like it. And I said, let's call the band Etiquette. He said, yeah, okay.
I didn't.
That is pretty much how it went down, isn't it?
Well, that's a good story.
Yeah.
I don't think that...
And it's just... I think Sarah and I were talking about the importance of etiquette and the lack of etiquette. And I was telling her how I was finding myself reading up on certain etiquette.
Emily Post's
etiquette guide. So when Harmer was in grade school, she liked reading that.
Uh-huh. She's very polite.
She is incredibly polite.
Sarah is very polite. Lots of decorum there. I think sometimes she frowns upon my lack of decorum.
Oh.
I can kind of feel it. Like a little bit. I think the harm's disappointed in me right now. That's how I feel a lot of the time. No, okay. Well, that's... Anyway, I didn't mean to...
End no, with that's good.
An etiquette question. But it sounds like this happened very organically.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not the relationship, but the actual musical collaboration. And you are anxious, Julie, to already get the next record going.
Well, I would like to get started on it this fall. Graham has, there's a finished Holy Fuck record that will be coming out in the new year.
January, right? That's the
probably.
Problem.
There's
no set date.
There's no release date set, but that's around the time. Mm-hmm. In the winter, I'm guessing, the new Holy Fuck record will come out. So I would like to start working on a new Etiquette record this fall.
Oh, prior to the Holy Fuck
yeah.
activity.
Yeah. Because it takes a while for a record to come out once it's finished.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how long
That's another thing people don't realize. We're talking about the lack of income as well that people don't realize, or the work that goes into things. But sometimes records sit after they're mastered for a while because you got to get the ball rolling. And
yeah, depending on who you're working with as well, they might have ideas for your release schedule and all that stuff. So yeah.
Yep.
I've been trying to shed some light on those topics and those ideas on the show sometimes. Just like, hey, I know your record just came out, but I'm sure it was done 7-8 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Typically, are you already working on it? And then invariably someone's like, yeah, actually, I already have the next record halfway done.
I know people that have sat on finished records for 2 years.
Like Neil Young? Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know him, but I know of him.
Yeah. No, it's true. You sit on records, and people
sit on
records.
It can be frustrating. Yeah. By the time a record comes out, I've known people that are already bored of the songs and want to be working on new songs in their set.
This is what
that's what Chad's like all the time. He's bored of the songs.
Well, why wouldn't
right
you be
away?
Bored? You poured your whole creative energy into making them sound a certain way, then they're finally out.
Yep.
And then you've got to peddle them when, you know, I think that's what made the 60s so interesting for the people we loved. Like, they didn't, it wasn't like by the time you heard the thing they were doing, or rather the thing that they put out, they'd barely moved on from it creatively, right? Whereas now it's like you could be like, I don't even care about these.
Which is weird because given the state of technology nowadays and how everything's going, you can finish a song and throw it up on SoundCloud that night or on Bandcamp and put it out there. So you think,
but not everyone can you can't do that. No. You can't do that in Holy Fuck.
No.
Cuz there's a lot of people depending on you to put it out properly. You don't have that freedom, my friend. No. You are basically a prisoner of your own music.
Oh my god. Well, I don't know. We'll see. We're going to maybe there's a positive to all this. Maybe there's something that'll happen that
I feel like you and I spoke at the Polaris Music Prize broadcast.
Yes.
Internet televised.
Do you remember that, Graham?
Broadcast?
Which one? The one where I was really drunk or the one where I was not drunk?
It was you and Brian. Was he drunk?
I was not drunk.
No.
No, you seemed fine.
Yeah, I was fine.
You were fine.
When he crashed the Mets interview, he was not drunk.
Oh, that's right. That was later. Yeah. That might have been the year before,
actually. It was
actually.
The year before,
Anyway, last year, she likes to dredge up your skeletons. Last year, I feel like you told me it was done. The record was done. Pretty much.
It was pretty much done at that point. And then we tweaked further and then got stuff mixed. But it's been pretty done for a while. And
I feel like Brian told me it was going in a slightly different, more of a live band feel or something? Or like he was going to play more guitar on it or something?
He plays more guitar on it.
Yeah.
There's more vocals. Him and I do more vocals.
You're doing vocals?
Yep. And, yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah. Yep. I'm sure that if all goes well, I'm sure you, me, and Brian can chat about it properly.
Cool.
So that we're not. This is bad etiquette. That to is. Be talking about a different project.
Excuse me.
Yeah. Sorry, Emily Post over here is getting upset.
Yeah, right.
Is there
excuse me, is there any way we could turn this back to me? I'm getting a bit uncomfortable right now.
Totally fair.
No, I'm a supporter.
No, I like the band too.
I'm teasing.
It's good. I feel like when we all are 20 years from now, when music people are looking back at your work, they will see that it's part of a package.
Mm-hmm.
That Etiquette and Julie Fader and Holy Fuck and whatever else, even the records you're producing, are part of a creative spurt, if you will. That sounds gross.
Spurt.
But that it's part of a thing.
No, it's true.
You know, and I think we're too close to it now to see that.
Right.
That the, because I will say, like, I made an allusion to the fact where I'm like, this Etiquette song could be a Holy Fuck song. Part of me also thought, I wonder if Brian's okay that totally could have been a Holy Fuck song, you know?
Have you heard the Lids record?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
the
exactly.
Lids, totally.
And also, when I think about it, what you're saying makes sense because Alex Edkins from Metz plays guitar on the Etiquette record on
two tracks. Right, okay.
And Brian Borchert sings on the Etiquette record, and Hannah Georges sings with us live.
Yeah.
And I toured in Chad's band with Matt Flagel and Monty from Viet Cong. And
right.
It all ties together.
It's a community.
We are a community.
I think you're going to see, as I say, mark my words, you two, 20 years from now, people will realize this is all part of the same aesthetic sort of momentum thing. I can't talk because
And Frances wants to join Operators.
There you go. Mm-hmm. It's all going to happen. 20 years from now, she'll be an Operator.
Yeah.
Is there an Etiquette song we can go to right now? From the record?
Sure. Which one? I don't know.
Attention Seeker?
Attention Seeker. This seems like a really weird... This is a very sharp-tongued song about an attention seeker and the fact that they're blaming everything in the world on everyone around them except themselves. And I couldn't help but think that it was about me.
I didn't want to say anything, but... Yeah, you inspired so much.
I don't have a brother. I didn't blame anything. I don't know. Yeah, anyway, I know there's a bunch of... It's a cool song, and it's a sharp song. And I know it's about Sarah Harmer.
Right.
I'm kidding. I just want to get her back.
Yeah, I remember around the time people kept saying, is this song about me?
That's what you
want. Is this about me? Is this about me? I was thinking, oh, freak.
There's a thing in Sloan where I think Chris Murphy thinks every Patrick Pentland song is about him.
Oh.
Particularly like You See the Good in Everyone and some of the more negative songs. I think it's a paranoia you develop when your friends start writing songs.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, I think this is about me. Uh-huh. Attention Seeker, that's me. Listen to me right now.
Yeah.
I had 10 different people, not specifically Attention Seeker, but just lyrics on the record when I was playing early ideas for people when we were working on the instrumentation. Ask me. I don't think I've ever asked anyone, is that song about me?
Yeah, that's...
And people were... I think it's a bold question.
It's gall.
Yeah.
That's a lot of gall. Well,
so, Attention Seeker is not about you.
No, I didn't think it was about me. I was just making a joke.
And I don't think it's as harsh lyrically as people think it is.
Like, the So Hard Done By, when you get to that part where you're singing So Hard Done By, you're just like, whoa. Like, that has a sharpness to it.
Yeah, I think.
Sorry. Anyway,
you're right.
I think it's a sharp song.
Yeah.
Let's hear it. This is Attention Seeker by Etiquette. Julie, Graham, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you.
And good luck with everything that you're working on.
Thanks, man.
Oh, by the way, I think the feeling is coming back in my face.
Oh, good.
Finally. Oh, man.
All that talking will help.
It did, actually, I think. It's like in my ear,
Clean
though.
Up the drool puddle.
Ugh.
Attention.
Hey, thanks again for checking out Creative Control with Vish Khanna. You can email me about the show at creativecontrol933@gmail.com. That's creative with a K, control with a K, 933@gmail.com. You can also follow our Twitter at Vish Creative, VishKreative. And you can also like our Facebook page. A version of this show airs on CFRU in Guelph every Wednesday at noon Eastern. And you can listen to that online at CFRU.ca, or if you're in the KW region, at 93.3 FM in Guelph. You can also sign up for the weekly mailing list for the podcast and the show at vishkhanna.com, and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. I believe that is everything I wanted to tell you. Thank you once again.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.